Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to The Real World now on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. The Real World, if you haven't tuned into this show before, is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. We are on every other Thursday from 4 to 5, so don't miss us. I'm Lily, as per usual, but unfortunately we're missing the other half of this show this week as Emma, my co-host, couldn't join us. But she'll be back with us for our next live episode, so not to worry. First off, I'm just going to give a couple FilmSoc updates. Just a reminder to keep an eye out for FilmSoc events, updates, anything like that. Most of them we'll put on our Instagram page, which is UBC Film Society on Instagram. And we finished our screenings for this year, but keep an eye out for next year because we had an amazing lineup of double features these past 4 months. All sorts of stuff from Chungking Express, La La Land, Shoplifters, and so much more. So check out our Instagram just to keep posted on whatever events we're hosting. Today's show, just to give a little overview of what we're going to cover, is I'm doing some sort of spin-off on like Spotify Wrapped, Apple Music Replay, whatever it is that you have. I just want to highlight like the best of what I was listening to the most, of favorite sounds of films from this past year, 2023. So we'll do a little movie soundtracks and scores 2023 Film Sock edition. But before we get started, I'm just going to get some ads going and then we'll come back. We're going to start off with some sounds from Barbie, so you do not want to miss that. But first off, just for our ads, here you are.
Sit back, relax.
Don't miss Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show, with plenty of funk, soul, surf, and more music. Wednesdays, 8 to 10 a.m. at 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Add us on Twitter, at Jack Velvet Radio. Find us online at jackvelvet.net.
About 40% of UBC students experience food insecurity. Sprouts is hosting a weekly produce market from 10:30 to 1:30 every Monday in the Life Building. With produce from local farms, students are free to take whatever they want. Sprouts Cafe is open from Monday to Thursday and is offering 30 free meals a day, completely free and no questions asked. They also host Community Eats, a completely free hot lunch that is open for all. Stop by and support the Sprouts cause for sustainable, accessible food at UBC.
Hey Vancouver! For fans of Ocean Alley, Flip Turn, and Still Woozy, alt rockers Juice are bringing their signature blend of rock, pop, R&B, and hip-hop to the Biltmore Cabaret on February 3rd, with support from Hembry. Tickets are on sale now. Get yours at admitone.com.
MRG Live is pleased to present the legendary DJ Shadow live at the Vogue Theater on January 23rd. Don't miss your chance to catch this pioneering producer performing music from his latest release, Action Adventure, alongside his rich 3-decade-long catalog, which includes collaborations with artists such as Run the Jewels, Nas, and De La Soul, among others. For tickets, head to admitone.com and search for DJ Shadow.
Robots need love too.
This is Dan Mangan, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and the surrounding university area.
They want to be loved by robots, need love.
you, Dan. That's right. You are listening to 101.9 FM at CITR. So if you missed the beginning of this episode, just a little recap. We are going to be doing a little movie soundtracks and scores of 2023. What was my favorite? I'm not going to be able to cover that all, but I'm going to play a couple songs and tell you a little bit of backstory to some of the best tracks that came out. So sound plays, obviously, a pivotal role in film, and this includes the music. Patterns can run through the film to engage the audience, make points of emphasis through the rhythm, melody, harmony, tempo. Like, everything about the songs affect our emotional reactions, and they also guide us through the film, sort of. They can trace patterns of development and just point out some of the more implicit meanings of what the film's trying to get across, and they can foreshadow, which we'll see a lot, especially in the first song I'm going to talk about, actually. So this year we got a lot of incredible scores, original music specific to the film, and some great soundtracks, collections of songs that were included in the movie. Obviously, if you know me, I've got to start off this episode with songs from Barbie. So the Barbie score, come on. This is music from the original motion picture soundtrack, composed by Mark Ronson and Andrew Wyatt, if you didn't know. It's already nominated for Grammy, Best Soundtrack for Visual Media category. It's recognized by Billboard Music Awards for Top Soundtrack. And then we've also got the Barbie album, which is separate from the score, and the album is 17 original songs from artists, and not just any old artists, like some crazy names up there. There's Sam Smith, Billie Eilish, Dominic Fike, Tame Impala, Dua Lipa, Lizzo, like so many that I didn't even name. And then there's also a cover from Brandi Carlile, which I'll talk about a bit more later. A lot of these songs were also written by Ronson and Wyatt, who composed the score as well. But some of the other artists, like Billie Eilish, wrote the song What Was I Made For, which is the one that she sang for the album. And the album's got a lot of range. Like, we've got these power ballads with the I'm Just Ken, Ryan Gosling sings that one, to like these disco dance party vibes with Dance the Night. So it's got great range. You're going to go through a lot of different emotions if you just shuffle the whole playlist, or the whole album, I mean. So it was really hard to pick a song because there's just so many. And like, why are there so many? Like, this music from this movie played such an important role in the film plot, but they put out so much just like for their marketing and branding of the film. There's the Barbie album, there's Barbie score, there's Barbie the album Best Weekend Ever edition. They rolled out so much with this film, and it took the world by storm. Like, not just the anthems of the film and connecting them back to scenes you saw, but a lot of the songs are just becoming generally popular, like not even associated with certain scenes or anything. So some of the accomplishments that Barbie the album has made is that it's the first film soundtrack in UK chart history to land 3 top 5 singles simultaneously. The first film soundtrack to land 3 top 5 slots. And so there's some others that came close to this, like some other notable mentions of soundtracks. I don't know if you can think of them right now, but there are a couple other that came close to it. I'll give you a second. I was pretty surprised by this, but Saturday Night Fever and Grease both had 3 tracks in the top 10 at the same time when they were released in 1978, but not the top 5. Not the top 5, like Barbie, the album, 3 in the top 5. That's crazy. Anyway, like I said, it's hard to pick one because they put a lot out. But I decided to go with Closer to Fine to play you, which is the cover from Brandi Carlile and Catherine Carlile sing it. Closer to Fine was originally a hit song from the Indigo Girls in 1989. And the cover is by Brandi Carlile, which made it onto Barbie, the album, Best Weekend Ever edition. Unlike most of the other songs in the movie, Closer to Fine plays 3 times within the story, with Barbie and some of the other characters singing it on their journey from the real world, not to be confused with the real world, what you're listening to right now, from the real world in the movie to Barbie Land. They sing it three times. Drawing patterns for viewers is a big part of what this does, like repeating the song and pointing to a main theme of the film, which is searching for answers, searching for truth. And it also, the lyrics really point to what's being foreshadowed as a crisis that Barbie has later of what is the truth? Like, how is she going to find the reason for why she's changing and she's not reaching this level of perfection that she used to? What is that reason? And like, is she going to be able to come to terms with it? Is it an easy fix? We'll see. But the song kind of grapples with that. And it suggests that Barbie may have to accept a bit of life's confusion, that there are no simple answers like she's looking for. And it draws connections between also like the physical journey of getting in the car and traveling from the real world, but also just her emotional learning about herself, learning about who she wants to be, and maybe accepting, coming to terms with her life a little bit more. One of the lyrics goes, "There's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to fine." So I think that kind of just captures Barbie by the end. It's a happy ending, I guess. But she didn't discover exactly the answer maybe she was looking for to restore this state of perfection, but she's on a more crooked route than she thought, and she just has to learn to accept that. There's not one answer. There's a lot of different ways that her life could go, but she kind of has to just come to terms with where she wants to be. And that's, I think, really special about this song. And Brandi Carlile makes a beautiful cover. I had to go with it because it's my mom's favorite singer, Brandi Carlile. In Barbie's words at the end, she says, "I want to be part of the people who make meaning," discovers who she is. It's not just about like definitives. It's about like exploring herself and seeing where she is in that moment. Like, she was Barbie. She was perfection. She was stereotypical Barbie. But she grows and she like learns a little bit more about herself throughout the film, and things change. There's not just one answer. So anyway, I'm going to play Closer to Fine for you. Hopefully that gives you a little bit of background on the story behind it and maybe some connections it draws in the film.
Give me insight between black and white. But the best thing you've ever done for me was to help me take my life less seriously. 'Cause it's only life after all. Yeah, it's only life. And lightness has a call that's hard to hear. I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sailed my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shore. I went to the doctor. Seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find, the closer I am to find. I went to see the doctor of philosophy with a poster. He never did. see through me, and I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Got my paper and I was free. Possibly a friend, and I woke up with a headache like my head against a board, twice as cloudy as I'd been the night before. I went in seeking clarity. I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the fountains. Yeah, we go to the Bible, and we go through the workout. We read up on revival, and we stand up for the lookout. And there's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. The closer I am to find. The closer I am to find. Yeah. The closer I am to find. To find. The closer.
So that was Closer to Fine, covered by Brandi Carlile from Barbie. Just listening back, like, I keep thinking about other things of just one of, they kind of list in the song all these places that they're searching for answers, like philosophers, the mountains, children, doctors, like all these places. And that was really Barbie's journey through the film. She went in hope of finding answers of how to fix herself to what she thought she had to be fixed to be. She went in search for, like, the girl who was playing with her, and she traveled to the real world. She, like, took all of these steps to find this answer that she wanted so bad. But it was kind of more the things that happened by chance, like America Ferrera's character finding her, just like picking her up at the school, even though Barbie thought she had to be at the school, finding the girl who was playing with her, who was messing with her, who was what she thought was ruining her. But it was the people, like, were there who wanted to help her. And I think she just had to realize that, like, there are people along the way that are going to help you. It's not just going to go ABC, like, according to plan. People will help you through it, even if twists and turns occur. Like, the inventor of Barbie herself was there when Barbie needed her. And I love that song. I want to show a bit of the range of the music that came out for this movie. So I'm going to quickly switch over to another song that was on the score for Barbie. This one was called Stairway to Weird Barbie. It's a fun song. It's a quick one. It's got this fun keyboard moment at the end. There's drums Mark Ronson, like, I watched this video of him that he explains that the drums weren't originally supposed to be there. They're, like, such a fun part of the piece. But he added drums, like, really last minute, sent it over to Greta Gerwig. And I guess, in his words, the genius that she is, she decided to keep the drums, and they pull it all together. It's fun. But this is when Barbie's walking up to Weird Barbie's house in search for her answers. And she's got this, there's this incredible view of Barbie Land. I think it's the first time we just get this full, like, from the top view of the eye-catching, colorful production design from the stairway, which is interesting because she's looking for these answers and she's, like, climbing these stairs to find Weird Barbie, who's supposed to have the answers, looking down at Barbie Land. It's a beautiful shot, and this is a beautiful part of the score. So I'll get this one going for you as well. This is Stairway to Weird Barbie. There we go. That was Stairway to Weird Barbie. So fun. It combines, like, that double clap clap that we get in Dance the Night as well, at the end, if you caught that, which is Barbie's kind of dance number when she's not completely crumbling with all of her worries of sadness and her body, her feet being flat and such. And she does this whole disco dance number with the clap clap. So there's this combination of the very, it's got a, that, that's, track's got a Weird Barbie feel to it, but it's the combination of both Weird Barbie and stereotypical Barbie before she's not so stereotypical. Anyway, that was just to show a bit of the range of, well, like I said, Barbie the album, Best Weekend Ever, Barbie the score, all the stuff that we got from this movie that just has spoken to so many women, so many different generations, just this universal female experience, I guess, which also is highlighted, like, with including the Indigo Girls and Brandi Carlile. Of, like I said, Brandi Carlile is my mom's favorite singer, and then we've also got all these, like, very recent young pop stars like Dua Lipa and such, and it just shows the range of this film through the music, that it's appealing to everyone. It resonates maybe different, like, people take different things, but it's got a big range of resonating with almost anyone, I think. That's how I feel about it, at least. Anyway, I'm going to move on to the next film I want to talk about. This is the Celine Songs film that came out this past year called Past Lives. I hope we get a chance to talk about this more next year with some of our episodes once we come back in January, but I'll focus mostly on the music right now. The score is incredible. I listen to it while I study. It's really got a good kind of calm but uncertain vibe to it, which is the feeling of the film, really. But there's one song with lyrics. There's one song that was written for this film by Sharon Van Etten. It's called Quiet Eyes, and she co-wrote it with Minnie Manchin's Zachary Dawes. Past Lives just for some background on the movie before I play the song for you, the film is centered around first loves who re-encounter one another as adults, but life has gotten in the way. They've separated. They used to be really close when they were younger, but they find their way to each other again later in this one life. And the song, Quiet Eyes, is said to be kind of reflective and introspective with some of the major themes that pop up through the movie of loss and self-discovery and just the overall experience of loving and losing and finding, showing some intangible feelings of love and life explored in the film. So it's a really, really beautiful song. And it's featured right at the as the closing song to the film. And it's just looking back on some major points for Nora, Haesung, and maybe even Arthur's relationship are the three kind of main characters that we get to see. It's mostly focused on Nora and Haesung, but Arthur as well. And some of the lyrics like really spoke to me of felt like they were reminiscing on some really key points through the film. One of the lyrics is staring at stars or a lightning bug on a faraway stair on a torchlit night. The field of depth on those marble steps will meet again in light. So we'll meet again. This is obviously so important. Past lives, the theme of rebirth, finding each other in different lives. It comes together through this reoccurring part of the film. They bring up this concept of inyun a lot, which is, as they say, relates to fate and finding each other in a new life, the way we kind of cycle through each other's lives and are reborn, and maybe we're in each other's past lives, future lives. It's unclear, but it's a beautiful concept that they explain. And also, one of the lines that I read talks about marble steps, which really reminded me of when Nora and Haesung, they're reunited. So they spent their childhood together, they're separated, and finally they come together again. He comes to visit her, and they're sitting on these marble steps, like in front of a carousel. It's kind of a still that's used a lot in the advertising for the film, so you might recognize it. And he says he wanted to see her one last time. When she asks him why he came looking for her, he said she left so quickly and he wanted to find her one more time. And they do meet again, and they're on these marble steps, and they kind of allude to trusting that they were together in past lives and hopefully they'll see each other in the next as well. So the song just really encapsulates these human emotions of searching for each other, but also searching for meaning and connection and understanding like what they might mean to each other now, but also in the past and future. The end of the song reflects this cycle of living and loving by kind of repeating some of the lines. It says, that's how it's done, that's how it's done, that's how it's undone. And then later on, fall, fall, calling out in spite of it all, fall, fall, will we meet again in the light? So they don't know for sure if they'll meet again, but it's a hopeful part of the film that maybe they will. Maybe the life that we're watching in the film right now is a past life and they are together in a future life. We don't know, but it's hopeful. And I hope that that's kind of what you get from this song, because that's the way it made me feel as well, like uncertain, but hopeful. So here is Quiet Eyes by Sharon Van Etten.
Calling memories of love.
So that was Quiet Eyes from Sharon Van Etten, which was featured at the end, like I said, of Past Lives, one of my favorite films of the year. So hopefully you'll hear more about it next year. But yeah, oh my gosh. When I tell you, like, I'm so serious right now that I've listened to that song since I discovered it a couple of days ago, actually, maybe probably about 20 times. I can't lie and say that I listened to Stairway to Weird Barbie as kind of the background of my life, but this is actually, I love this song. It's so, so good. Anyway, there's a lot of other great songs that came on the score from Past Lives, but I'm going to move on to another film that I'm so excited about. Okay, yeah. So this is The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. And how could I not? It's the songbirds. Like, this is a musical. And we get these amazing performances from Rachel Zegler mostly, but also who, by the way, plays Lucy Gray Baird, who is the main character of The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. But a lot of the performances are also by her entire band, the Covey Band. The one that I'm going to play is just from Rachel Zegler, Lucy Gray. And I hope also to talk about this film a lot more in 2023, because I liked it for a lot more than just its music. But yeah, we're going to kick off The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes with The Hanging Tree, because obviously. So this is a song that's heard a couple times in the film. First when President Snow, oh my gosh, he's not president yet, but Coriolanus Snow, pre-president era, finds Lucy in a field playing the guitar by herself. And then later on in the movie, it plays again, including at the ending. So this version of the song that I'm going to play is from Rachel Zegler, sings it. But you might recognize it from the 2014 version from Jennifer Lawrence. So Jennifer Lawrence was on Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart with The Hanging Tree when it was released in 2014, I think, with The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. According to Billboard, Lawrence is the 13th actor to win an Oscar in an acting category and also appear on the Hot 100. So Jennifer Lawrence really turned singer in this song. She sings it a cappella originally in the film, and then it's also joined by a choir and an orchestra later on when she's playing Katniss Everdeen in The Mockingjay Part 1. So The Hanging Tree was written by Suzanne Collins, the author of the Hunger Games series, but also in collaboration with the Lumineers, Freights and Schultz, who are both part of the band. And it was composed by James Newton Howard for Mockingjay. That was the original composition, was from James Newton Howard. But now we've got Rachel Zegler's version, which is also racking up streams with her own flair to the song, which is pretty exciting. And it's relevant in both films, but we really learn about the lyrics in this prequel. Like, you can see that it's an anthem, like it's a motivator in The Mockingjay Part 1, but we get the background of what The Hanging Tree is. At least I didn't know. I guess maybe some that had already been revealed through some like extra reading. But from the films that I watched, I've only seen the four films. I didn't read the books. I didn't know what The Hanging Tree was. And you could get the vibe of like what it meant to her as part of rebelling. But in Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, we learn that the tree is where people are hanged as a punishment. Lucy Gray Baird originally wrote the song, as goes in the story, after witnessing the murder of a man named Arlo Chance, who is hanged at the tree where these executions take place, because he's accused of killing two peacekeepers and also like a manager of the mines, I guess, because they're in District 12. As the song goes, they say he murdered three. Anyway, in this film, we get the background to the song, which it was really important to me to understand the significance of what it meant to a rebellion, because the hanging tree is why our beloved Katniss brings it in about 65 years later, I think, when she comes back and she starts using it for the rebellion to begin the second full-blown rebellion against the Capitol. And that's kind of what it becomes, like a call out of what's going down between the Capitol and the districts, the hanging tree, and how people are being punished. So this is Rachel Zegler's version of The Hanging Tree as heard in The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Let's give it a listen.
Are you coming to the tree where they strung up a man? They say murdered three. Strange things did happen here. No stranger would it be if we met up at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where the dead man called out for his love to flee? Strange things did happen here. No stranger would it be if we met up at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where I told you to run so we'd both be free? Strange things did happen here. No stranger would it be if we met up at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where a necklace of rope side by side with me? Strange things did happen here. No stranger would it be if we met up at midnight in the hanging tree.
Okay, there we have it, The Hanging Tree, Rachel Zegler's version that came out this past year. Oh my gosh, she has an incredible voice. I love the soundtrack to this film just because she's amazing. She's a great singer, and there's a lot of other ones that I would have loved to play, like her kind of love song to snow. You gotta give them a listen, but The Hanging Tree is a classic. It ties in with the rest of the series like none of the other songs, so I had to give it a play. Moving on, we're going to go on to the next film I want to talk about in this kind of film society, wrapped, Spotify wrapped, Apple Music replay, whatever, but of film soundtracks from this past year, 2023, the best of, what really caught my eye. If you're jumping on late, again, this is CITR 101.9 FM, and I'm Lily, the host of The Real World, UBC Film Society's segment. So we've talked about Barbie, some of the music that came from that. We've talked about a song that came from Past Lives, another amazing film that came out this past year, and then we just talked a little bit about The Hanging Tree, Rachel Zegler's version from The Hunger Games Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. The next film I want to talk about also has a really fun sound to it, and this is Asteroid City. And we kind of get, this is the Wes Anderson full-length feature film that came out this past year. And the songs on this soundtrack, like, I was just thinking, like, go really with the vibe of Wes Anderson of touching upon these really sometimes dark topics, but in a really fun, funky, colorful way. The songs I'm going to talk about are sad, the same way that a lot of the stories we get from him have a sad undertone, but just the comedic approach to them make it a lot more digestible and just a little brighter. So one of the songs that stood out to me was Last Train to San Fernando, and this is sung by Johnny Duncan and the Bluegrass Boys. Released in 1957, this is kind of an adaptation of a song from the 1950s. The origins of the song were originally a Trinidadian calypso song, which I didn't really know what calypso meant, but apparently this is a genre. It's an Afro-Caribbean musical tradition that came from Trinidad and Tobago in the mid-19th century, and it's got this very upbeat call-and-response kind of beat to it. And then it was adapted into the folk version that we hear in Asteroid City. So the original one was written by Sylvester Devere, Mighty Dictator, and Randolph Padmore, and it was released by Mighty Dictator in 1950. But now, the version we're going to hear is sung in the film by Johnny Duncan and the Bluegrass Boys, not in the original calypso genre, but in the skiffle genre. I also didn't know what that meant. But skiffle is a genre of folk music with influences from American folk music, blues, country, bluegrass, and jazz. And so this version was really popularized in 1957, and that's what's used in Asteroid City. The song is believed to be about a woman having like this one last fling before she's married off to her fiancé the following day, but she needs to catch the last train to San Fernando to get back to her wedding. So the stakes are high here. And the narrator sings about meeting a woman named Dorothy who is marrying a member of high society the next day. And missing the train for Dorothy would mean that she doesn't get back. She's not back in the physical place where she's meant to be in San Fernando. And she also wouldn't really be able to get back to the emotional place with her fiancé because she's off having one last fling and she didn't make it back in time. So catching this last train is very symbolic of getting back physically, emotionally, to like what her life is maybe in her mind supposed to be, what it was. But right now she's not there and she's trying to catch that last train. In the film, Asteroid City, it plays in the opening to what is the first act of the play that is taking place inside the film. So Act 1 opens and we hear Last Train to San Fernando as this train is training into this tiny little dot on the map that is Asteroid City. So it's kind of the introduction to the main set of the play, which is in the movie, the world of Asteroid City. And there's some like big contrasts in this because in the opening, Last Train to San Fernando comes on from Johnny Duncan and the train is lugging in these like mass amounts of food and materials to the distant isolated land of Asteroid City. And the lyrics kind of highlight these feelings of isolation. Once you're there, you're stuck. And literally so, because the family, which is Jason Schwartzman's character and his four kids, their car breaks down once they get to Asteroid City. So they're stuck there the same way that Dorothy in the original song would be stuck if she doesn't get the last train out. So there's this feeling of isolation. But like I said, like, it's an upbeat song. You're not going to cry while you're listening to it. Don't worry. But that's kind of the overall feeling of it. They say, last train to San Fernando, if you miss this one, you'll never get another. So it's kind of about like, last chance, last ditch effort to escape something or being stuck in the past, maybe moving on to the future, this feeling of being stuck. So I'm gonna give that a listen and then we'll connect it to some of the other songs that come up through this film Asteroid City. But for now, here's Last Train to San Fernando from Johnny Duncan and the Bluegrass Boys.
Thank you. San Fernando.
Last train
to San Fernando.
Last train
to San Fernando.
Okay, so there was Last Train to San Fernando, heard at the very beginning of Wes Anderson's Asteroid City. But there's this theme of trains, apparently, in the film's soundtrack. So I kind of connected it to the end. So at the beginning, we're coming into Act One, and Last Train to San Fernando is playing. And when we're leaving, very end of the movie, they found a ride. Their car broke down, but they found a different way out of Asteroid City. And the very end of the film has them driving down this long kind of desert road away from the dot on the map that is Asteroid City, this tiny little spot in the desert. And in the background, the song Freight Train from the Chaz McDevitt Skiffle group and Nancy Whiskey, also came out in 1957, by the way, is playing in the background as they're leaving. This sense of uncertainty of what's going down with the car. How are they getting out of there? And one of the lyrics of this song is, "Don't know where he's headed, for what he's done against the law. Got no future, got no hope. When he dies, tell them he's gone to sleep." So these are a couple different parts of the lyrics of Freight Train that play at the end. And both songs, I think, tie in together really nicely. At the beginning, there's this sense of urgency related to being isolated and also the current situation that all the characters are in after they find out that their mother has passed. So the mother of the four kids has passed on. This isn't a spoiler. It happens at the very beginning. You never really like meet her properly or anything. But there's that feeling of uncertainty of how they're going to move on from that. How they're going to move past finding out that she's died. And there's just a lot of questions in the air. And that's kind of what comes in with Last Train at the beginning of, are we going to miss this train? Where are we going to catch another? How do we move on from this? And then by the end, Freight Train comes on and it highlights this sense of uncertainty. But also, it gives voice to that somehow someone will find a way to leave the city or move on from the information that they just found out about their mom, move past it. And it underlines the point that's echoed throughout the film, which if you've seen it, you'll recognize it. And also it will jump out at you if you do go see Asteroid City now. They repeat this a lot. You can't wake up if you don't fall asleep. Again and again and again, they say that, which just kind of, I think, ties in with these two songs. It's about accepting that there's complications in the way that, like, waking up, realizing how to catch that last train, how to take that last step, find your way back. Waking up and being able to do that is about falling asleep first. It's about accepting that there's complications in the storyline, that you're going to get bad news, bad things are going to happen, things like that. But it works out. Like, they find a way out in the end. I might have taken a more positive message away from this movie than some. It could have had a darker meaning, but at least that's what I get from it. And especially kind of having Last Train at the beginning and then Freight Train at the end, I think they contrast each other well and show a layer of acceptance of the situations that all the characters are in and also physically are in Asteroid City. And this theme is kind of encapsulated also in another song from Asteroid City's soundtrack called, again, "You Can't Wake Up If You Don't Fall Asleep." One of the lyrics in this song is, "So go live your dreams and live them real deep. There is some counting money and there's some counting sheep. Oh, you can't wake up if you don't fall asleep." And I just think that ties in really well with the other songs. It ties in with the theme, fall asleep so that you can wake up, realize kind of where you're at and what you need to accept. Everyone's on these different paths, but just go live your dreams. Like it says, live your life. There's some comedic commentary in the film. Like at the very end, there's just like a bomb going off in the background. And there's just this police car whipping through whipping through, that's not even a city, it's not even a town, but just that little place of Asteroid City, there's all this like background noise going on, but either way, you kind of got to accept where you are and maybe a little bit trust that that ride comes for them and that ride does take them to that next step. And the main character kind of knows where he needs to move on from here now that his wife has passed. He kind of gets that approval maybe that he needs, not that he didn't know he needed, but he's able to move on after that. So I'm going to give you a little listen to You Can't Wake Up If You Don't Fall Asleep, because it just ties the movie together really well. And this will be kind of the wrap up to this segment, which has been all about music that came out on movie soundtracks and scores this past year. So here is You Can't Wake Up If You Don't Fall Asleep from Jarvis Cocker on Asteroid City Original Motion Picture Soundtrack Album.
Can't wake up if you don't fall asleep. You can't fall in love and land on your feet. You won't smell the roses if you never plant a seed. And you can't wake up if you don't fall asleep.
All right, there was You Can't Wake Up If You Don't Fall Asleep, featured in Asteroid City, Wes Anderson's 2023 film, and that song was by Jarvis Cocker. So this episode, it was a fun one. We talked all about music, movie soundtracks, movie scores, some of my favorites from this past year. Obviously, there's a lot of honorable mentions, I think. I wish we could have had more time to talk about all the other soundtracks that came out this year, but we'll definitely cover that in some of our episodes when we return in January in the new year. But today we talked about past lives, Barbie, Asteroid City, and The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. So thank you for tuning in. Again, this is The Real World, UBC Film Society's segment at CITR 101.9 FM. Keep an eye out on our Instagram for any events that are coming up, and also to tune in again for our next episode. We're out every other week, every other Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. So thank you for listening.